Welcome to the Stuck in a Rut podcast.
Got him, dropped him. Nice shot, buddy.
We're excited to bring you our stories and hunting tips to elevate your outdoor adventures and experiences.
We aim to uncover the real, raw strategies of do-it-yourself hunting that will bring your dreams to life and generate success. To follow along with our yearly hunts, subscribe to Stuck in the Rut on YouTube.
Okay, we're rolling. Welcome back to another Stuck in the Rut podcast. We suck at staying very active on the podcast, but it is hunting season, and we are literally just leaving camp, coming off the mountain. Me, Adam, got Tom in the back seat, Trav's driving, and we have a long drive out. So we wanted to do a podcast on my Idaho bighorn sheep hunt, as it's super fresh in our mind. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about this. Thank you, Adam, for inviting me on this trip.
Tom was very crucial in the part of the trip.
Oh, stop. I think we all are. Our family makes a really good team in getting out there and getting things done.
So, yeah, we'll get to that story in a minute. But, Adam, why don't you tell us about the preparation that went into this trip? And probably, I don't know, the hour. Like, how many hours do you think you had in planning, reading, looking, researching, talking to people before you even come on a trip?
Well,
like,
to be honest, not as much as most people, not as much as I should have. I've been pretty busy. I got set up with Hunt and Fool this year, so I drew the tag through them in Idaho. I usually forget to put in for stuff, and I just told them, I said, put me in for a sheep unit, and I was going to go with an easier one, but then I'm like, man, there's the easier sheep units are easier to draw for a reason. There's not a lot of access. There's not a lot of sheep in the unit, and so I said, put me in for a good one, and they did. I was flying a survey for work. My wife texted me, and she said, hey, I got some news. You need to call me when you land. And so, being pessimistic, I was like, no. I called her. I said, what's the deal? She said, no, you need to land first. I'm like, just freaking tell me, okay? I know it's bad. Go ahead. And she's like, you drew Idaho bighorn sheep. And she didn't want me to crash the airplane, and I wasn't close to crashing, but I was 200 feet above the ground looking at bald eagles. And I said, okay, we're going home, and canceled the rest of the survey and went home to celebrate. Checked with Hunt and Fool, confirmed that. This is like, they get the results way before I could have, really. Looked at the unit, and there was access points. And I'm used to only being able to fly in, so I was really happy with that. Started talking to people at Hunt and Fool. I didn't talk to any biologists. I figured they're going to tell me just what they tell everyone. I wanted to talk to people who had hunted the unit, so I got the list from Hunting Fool. Called those guys, and the cool thing about a sheep tag, it's not like deer and elk. It's a once-in-a-lifetime tag. Most people are going to try and do their very best to shoot a sheep, and a lot of those guys have done a lot of research, and they were dropping waypoints and saying, go here, glass here, saw this ram here, sending me pictures, and kind of the consensus I drew up was it's going to be smoky early because there's a lot of fires in central Idaho. It's going to be snowy mid-September, so you got to watch out for that. It's going to be a hard hunt. There's good sheep in the area, and if you see a 155 to 165, you better shoot that ram because that's considered a mature ram for the unit.
Yep, and then so Adam, actually I knew before Adam did. Tana called me right away because she couldn't get a hold of Adam and told me, and this is Travis talking, and I was just super jacked for them. Tana was really excited. Good supportive wife, and just instantly I was like, well, I'm going. Like, I've always kind of wanted a sheep hunt. I've never actually shot a sheep myself, and so I wanted the experience as well. Later on in the year when the Idaho drying results came out, I drew a special deer tag that opened the same day of season, but I told Adam, I already told you I'm going to go. I'm committed to helping you spot and pack and do the preparation and planning. And then I get called to jury duty starting September 1st. Thank goodness I live in a small town. I went in, told the guy the situation that I got this once-in-a-lifetime sheep tag. And thank goodness he put me on the next quarter for jury duty. So that would have really been a bummer if he wouldn't have been supportive of that. So worked out, it all worked out good. And then we're like, Tom was down for coming. So it's like, heck yeah, the three of us, that'd be so much better, more eyes. And if we do kill one, we're going to be able to pack it out one trip.
And this is such a special tag. Everyone I talk to, just like, nothing else in your life at this point matters. Like, you still have to be a dad and a husband, but literally, this is the only thing that needs to matter until a ram's on the ground. So it puts a lot of pressure on you and everything. And so, you know, I kind of been thinking about it, but after I drew the tag, I did the most sensible thing and I quit my job. So I feel like that was a good move. And everyone's like, you need to be committed. I'm like, okay, I quit my job there. So I have no other priorities. And,
he didn't just quit it. He's not telling the whole story. They're building a big a hangar house to put their airplane in and have a house to live in and raise their kids in. And so I went up about a month ago, and Adam and I have been planning that. And that's a lot of work and logistics, getting house materials. We bought them in Idaho. Adam coordinated shipping them to the barge in Seattle, and then from Seattle, barging them to King Salmon, Alaska, which took about a month. Trusses and everything, counting down to the last screw and nail and board. So that was a big undertaking and took a lot of our time and brain power. So, and he quit his job, but he's also building himself their own house up there. So he's still working and gaining equity for their family. But so that was a lot of our summer. So his mind was pretty occupied with that, and so was mine. We didn't have a lot of time. And we were talking about coming down early and scouting, but just with family and work, it didn't work out. So we're like, well, let's just, all we can do is come down 2 days early. And I'm sure a lot of people would think that was a bad idea. But, it was a blessing that this is one of the few years that the smoke wasn't that bad and we were able to glass. Sometimes guys get up here and they can't see 10 feet because the smoke's so bad this early. But thank goodness there was three of us. We all split up. We went different directions and glassed. And we got one important, very important, vital piece of information before I left. And a friend that had hunted this unit a couple times told me he was here helping a friend last year. He said, we missed a really big ram at the head end of this canyon. He said, go right here. He showed me on the map. He said, go right here. You can glass across. And last year he was right there with a couple rams and he got away. So Adam, we decided that Adam would go there first and check that first night. Tom and I went and checked different areas. And what'd you see, Adam? We got back and gave us some news.
Yeah, just to touch what Drav said, like, most people would make at least one scouting trip for 3 or 4 days. There was guys that came multiple scouting trips that we had talked to, while there was even snow up in the mountains to get up here, because it's such an important tag. And I almost felt lazy or guilty that I wasn't devoting that, but I was like, I have a life and priorities and kids, and we kind of felt behind the eight ball. But ever since I met Trav and Tom, they said, yeah, we're not really much into scouting. We kind of just like scout with guns in our hands and figure it out and usually do all right. So I was going on good faith that we were going to be able to pull it off. But yeah, opening morning, we split up. Trav, you're going to go this way. Tom, we'll send you here. He was kind of close to me. And there's huge drainages, right?
Just one correction. So two days before season, now opening morning, but opening, yeah, that's the first day we got here. Yes.
Yeah, it's the first day we got here. Tom and I go to one drainage, but he's 5 miles downstream from me. I'm kind of up in the head end of this basin, which wouldn't be a likely glassing point because you're just looking at some small country, but it's a tip we had from someone from a good ram last year. Went in there, and the whole country in Central Idaho is just kind of dead. There's no deer, there's no elk, there's a couple squirrels and a few grouse.
And a lot of wolf food. A
lot of wolf sign. It's just desolate, and just tons of food. There should be deer and elk and game everywhere, but so you're hearing everything. You're hearing rocks roll, stuff like that. And one tip people said is you're going to hear rams hit horns. And we're like, but it's not the rut. But I guess they just kind of do it. And so I had heard that, and I wasn't sure what it was. And then I heard another one. I'm like, that definitely sounded like two rams hitting heads. And it was down below me, and so I'm looking down, but I couldn't really pinpoint it, kind of like looking for one elk bugle. And then I hear it again. And then I was able to pinpoint it, and I glassed two rams up in the shade. They're hard to see. And I could see there were smallerish rams. I'm like, those look like 150-inch rams. And I was like, you know, honestly, those are not, like, giant, what I'd love to have on the wall. But I said, that do. It's a decent sheep. It looks somewhat mature. Then I kept searching, and I found another one. And it was 2 seconds. It was like, yep, I'm going to kill that one. And I knew it was big. I knew it was mature. Roman nose, big pot belly, and yeah, I got some footage of that. I was super pumped and got back to the trail, met up with Tom, and he told me, well, I guess Tom, he told me you saw.
Oh, I saw a decent ram, and I was pretty stoked. I'm like, yes! Everybody's going to be so proud of the ram I found, and then I saw Adam's ram that he found. I'm like, oh, never mind. His was bigger, and it was in a better spot to kill it.
Yeah, and a crucial thing is when we came down, like, everybody needs a spotting scope and a phone scope just so that you can take pictures. So we're able to come back that night. I didn't see anything the direction I went, but I was able to, we were all able to look at all the pictures. And yeah, obviously the one that Tom saw was a nice ram. I think any of us would have shot that ram. And he was with a bachelor group of five. But when we looked at that picture and then the phone scope pictures of the one that Adam saw, it's like, yeah, that's no doubt the biggest ram. So then we spent the next couple days like, okay, well, that's our number one ram we're going to go for. But we got to find a backup plan of some sort because there's people everywhere. There's a handful of camps that are all, there's only one flat spot. And so there's literally eight or nine tents right around the same area that we're camping, going out the same trails we're going to, glassing the same sheep that Adam's glassing. So we're like, we need a backup plan just in case this doesn't work. So we spent the next 2 days walking anywhere from 10 to 15 miles a piece in a day's time, searching new country. And I never saw a sheep. I never saw one. But I was like, you know what? Sometimes when you come into an area, it takes 3 days, is usually what I figure, to find the animals if you don't have any tips whatsoever. So it's kind of like, well, I'm just going to – Adam's camped out on the big one. He's watching his moves.
Yeah, that was my job.
He's studying it. He's watching where they go for water. He's watching where they go to bed down. So we can try and kind of pattern this thing with 2 days before season. And Tom and I continued to look for a backup ram. And besides that one canyon, we never found any.
Yeah, and Trav was just kind of going off. I mean, scouting in our mind is as much of finding the animals or checking off drainages where there's nothing. And Trav's got some of the best eyes we've seen, and Tom and I joke around, like, when we glass, we're just trying to see one animal each day before Travis does, and we feel like we're doing a good job. That's how good his eyes are. And then me and Tom are over here, like, 2 5-year-olds high-fiving, like, oh, I found something. And we kept coming back every day, and what'd you see, Trav, what'd you see? And he's like, I didn't see an animal. Are you kidding me? So Trav's,
some mule deer.
Yeah, like a couple little bucks. But, I mean, Trav's hiking further than anyone, getting way up high with a spotting scope, with binos, with everything. And not seeing a ewe, a lamb, small rams, nothing. And so all these places where people said, yeah, check this drainage for sheep. There's a spring over here. We're just turning up nothing. So we don't have a plan B, which is kind of scary. And the hard thing is you talk to other people, too, because you're all kind of in one congested area. And it's really weird because everyone knows there's sheep around, but it's the most vague. It's a once-in-a-lifetime tag. And everyone's being super vague of how this is supposed to work. And, oh, yeah, you guys see, oh, yeah, we've seen some stuff, you know, just kind of been around. And you assume that maybe these people have seen the ram you want to go after, but maybe they haven't. So it's pretty tough.
Oh, yeah. Wait, where were we at?
I was going to say, so, like, I was camped on the ram, Tom. Then what'd you do the next 2 days? Because Trav just hiked and didn't see anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I was kind of doing the same thing where we were just all splitting up and looking for stuff, you know, and I was seeing mule deer. And then I think the other issue we were fighting is, you know, we're not the only people with the tag. There's other people in this unit. And the unfortunate truth was, is we were told that, you know, there's a chance that you may have some competition. And that's not what you expect when you draw a sheep tag, is having competition. And so, you know, we were bumping other people in the woods. There was, although there would be like a person with one tag, that one person would have, I don't know, like a dozen other people looking for sheep for them and stuff. So, I mean,
maybe not that many, but quite a few buddies.
Yeah, maybe I'm exaggerating there, but I mean, there was people on every ridge top. I was like, this is kind of weird. And we kind of feel outnumbered here. Like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, normally, we talked about this too. A lot of times, you pull up to an area, we're younger, we have youth on our side, we're all in good shape, we can hike, we can glass, and sometimes you'll pull up, and someday we'll be there too, but there'll be an elderly gentleman with a tag, and it's like, well, he's not going to most likely go, you know, 12 miles and put a spike camp on his back and camp out for 3 days. And so, and a lot of times they're open about it. They're just like, yeah, we're going to hunt right here 3 or 4 miles from camp. And so you don't have that competition way back if you're willing to go further. In this case, these guys, every tag we saw, every guy that had a tag had a group of 4 or 5 buddies with them. They're all helping glass, and they were all in shape. They were all hardcore hunters, and they were all willing to go the distance, no matter how far it took. So it was different competition than I would say we'd normally have. Yeah, that doesn't really matter. We just kept saying, you know what, there's going to be people there. Most likely they're seeing the same ram that Adam sees. But all we can do is hunt like we always do, and we're just going to try and figure out and formulate a plan to shoot that ram the first possible opportunity we get, the first day of season, just as soon as legal daylight hits, try and spot him and kill him. So that's the next plan that we had to formulate. Yep. After we found out there was no rams anywhere else to go after.
Yeah, so that...
And I do have to say one more thing. So the main reason there was rams in other basins a couple weeks ago, we were told by some guys that have been up here glassing, but the wolves were up here howling 3 nights before we got here, and they busted those rams out somewhere. And so, you know, it's hard to... When you can scout, you can pattern, you can spend all the time you want all summer, but if there's wolves in the area or some sort of pressure... Literally, that's what happened here. 3 days before season, busted out a group of rams. There was a nice one in that group, and these guys couldn't find him anymore. And that was in a totally different drainage what we were in. But that is an unfortunate truth that can happen to you. Spend a lot of time scouting. You think you might have one in the bag. With wolves around, it's not the case.
Yeah, so I'm sure those guys were pretty disheartened about that. They just keep turning up sheep and looking and looking. And I wanted to tell myself they didn't have eyes on this ram, but it wasn't like I went in there and found them the first day. And so, if they've been up here in the summer multiple times, they've probably seen him. And they have the same intel and talked to the same people I had and different things. And biologists have probably done more research. And so... We figured they kind of knew what was going on. The day before the opener, I went in on this ridge to glass this ram, and I was pretty close. It was like 1,000, 1,200 yards from the sheep, and I had just a thermal coming down the ridge off my back. They felt in the back of my neck, and I'm just like, man, I've been screwed by that elk hunting too many times. Like, oh, it's probably not going to be that bad. I'll just drop into this drainage, and it's going to change, or the elk won't smell me this far away, and then you blow them all out. And we didn't have a plan B, so... I backed out. I didn't want to go in there. I wanted to pattern him, and I wanted to know his habits so I could kill him first day before anyone else did, but I didn't want to blow him out. And I knew if I did, no one's going to kill this ram. He's going to go up and over the top into some nasty crag. We're never going to see him again. So I backed out, and I kind of got to the main ridge, and I just kind of sitting there, and a guy walks right by me, and I was like, oh, man, and just the stress and the anxiety of this hunt. I don't know if it was anxiety, but I'm guessing it was, and I don't like that. So for whoever has anxiety in life, I've never really understood it, but I think this hunt I've kind of started to grasp it. It's just a very uneasy, stressful feeling. It's like, where's that guy going? What's he going to do? Is he going to see me? And these dudes are all like, I'm 6'2", 250, maybe a few pounds lighter because I hiked my butt off yesterday, but these dudes are all, I mean, fairly small sheep hunting like guys, like 5'6", 5'9", 130 to 170 pounds maybe.
Look like they run 15 miles a day.
Yeah,
all in really good shape.
All super fit. They're all decked out. I mean, they got the gear. They're young. One of them was a buddy who's an outfitter, killed big sheep and stuff. So they got the specialist on their side, so to speak. We're just like, oh, it looks like a ram. And so, yeah, we're feeling a little intimidated by that. But we're just like, well, we're here to do what you're going to do. We just got to find the animal and kill it. So this guy's walking by. I don't know where he's going, if he's going to see the sheep. Travis said, well, could you see the sheep where he was from? I said, well, I'd like to think no, but maybe you could. I don't know. And so it's just uneasy the rest of the day. And then we get back to camp. Tom had been looking. Trav had been looking. No one had seen anything.
This is the day before season, just so you're picturing that.
Yeah, still day before season. And then Tom tells us he had a conversation.
Oh, well, just one of the guys. So I
speak up a little bit.
So he's, you know, that we met some really cool people in there, but I think everybody's all being really tight-lipped, as you would know, because I'm pretty sure, I mean, at this point, I think I was starting, you know, I think we're all getting the hint that everybody's seeing the same group of sheep, anybody with a sheep tag. It's like the only group of sheep that are in a good spot to stay away from wolves and stuff. And so I was just kind of trying to pry as much as I could just to see where they're going. And they didn't really give me any information. But I wanted to at least let them know the direction we were heading. So I kind of just pointed the direction, hey, like, we're going to be hunting up there opening morning, just letting you guys know. And I was just, you know, more or less trying to get information from them.
Because we wanted to go shoot the sheep they were looking for. Just like, if you guys have a sheep spotted here, we'll go focus somewhere else.
Yeah, because I was glassing a completely different. I was glassing a completely different spot, and this guy shows up, and I was like, if you have a big ram spotted right here, I don't have anything spotted, so I mean, I can back out. So
we were trying to do the right thing, yeah.
Yeah, so at that point, we were just trying to, you know,
let's just work together instead of work against each other.
Yeah, and that's.
So anyway, long story short, I think that, I'm not sure, but one or two things happened.
Yeah.
He either got on the radio and said, well, those guys are going that way, so you guys need to take a camp out there. Because as soon as we walk back, we see a group of four guys with camps on their back at noon, which you wouldn't normally leave at noon because it's 90 degrees.
Dude, it almost looked like they were scrambling.
And they were scrambled for stuff, and they were heading that direction that Tom pointed at. So either that happened, maybe that didn't happen, and they just went back and they saw the same ram that Adam saw that morning, the guy that had passed him on the trail, and came back, and we're going to go spike camp on it and formulate a plan. Either way, it doesn't matter. They saw the ram. They were going after it. And so we're like, then I think the anxiety really kicked in for all of us. We're just like, oh man, that's kind of a bummer. You obviously hope for no competition, and that kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of hunting when there's, you know, at this point, seven different people that are going to be back there looking and trying to help get the same ram. So anyway, we go back there that evening, and we're sneaking down the ridge that Adam had been watching morning and night.
No sign of people.
No
just
sign
myself.
Of people. Adam comes around the corner, and his face drops, heart drops. There's a tent right on the ridge, right where we're going to glass.
Let's go home.
Yeah. He's just like, what do we do? And before that, as we were walking down, I pointed. We were looking down this long, long drainage, and you couldn't see where the ram was at. He was across the canyon. But I pointed to Adam. I'm like, what about that bench down there? It looks nasty as can be. But to me, it looks like maybe you could get to that bench and shoot across. And we're like, yeah, that's an idea. But that is a crappy idea because it's nasty getting down there. It's just horribly steep. Lots of timber, cliffs mixed in. So we kind of forgot about that idea. We continued on. We saw that tent. And it's like, well, what do we do? We just go out there and sit right next to these guys and that are got a tag. And Tom made a good point. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I'd rather just not let them, let's just not make a plan with them. Let's just hunt it like we would normally hunt it.
Yeah.
And try and kill it before, like as soon as it gets daylight. Let's just formulate a plan regardless of them. Because where they were from, the glassing point, you can't shoot that far. It was over 1,200 yards. So that's not a kill location. That's just a lookout location. So we went and got a different vantage point, and we spotted the rams. Adam had real good eyes. He spotted it before me down in the shade.
I just want to say, like, Tom, he just said, yeah, take a moment and think about this. Do we really want to go sit by those guys and, like, show them your cards? And that was really smart to take. I mean, because I was flustered and I didn't know what to do. I don't like competition. I don't like confrontation. I want to see nobody.
Adam's not used to that. He's used to hunting in Alaska. If he sees somebody, he flies somewhere else.
I'll fly my airplane somewhere else.
And he'll land, and he has zero competition. So this, I mean, Tom and I are a little more used to it. It wasn't as big of a deal to me. I kind of expected it. But Adam was like, damn, this sucks. Like, these guys are literally hardcore, and they're going after the same ram, glassing the same spots, formulating probably the same plan that we are.
Well, they're all lightweight, in shape. They all have radios. And it's like SWAT team. They're like, how is this ram ever going to live? They got two tags. One guy's going this guy. One guy's going to go this way for the ram. And they got all these glassers and all these different points. And I'm just like, Tom made a good point. He's like, it literally feels like you're on a governor's tag and Mossback's guiding it. And you have all these people looking for one animal. And you're the other guy with the tag. And it's just me, Tom, and Trav. And we're like, well, we feel outnumbered.
definitely feel outnumbered. And I just told Tom and Charlie, I said, I struggle so much with this because I can read animal behavior. I can read the wind. I can even kind of read where predators might push an animal if it gets bad and we can go from there. But I don't know what a human's going to do, how dumb they're going to be, what tactic they're going to use, how many guys are going to go. So at that point, I just said, okay, well, Trav, what are we going to do? He's like, well, let's just go try and find the ram.
Okay, so then, yeah, we found the ram. Adam spotted him before I did. Got great eyes. Ram that are down in the shade, real low on the hill, and they were headbutting. We couldn't hear them, but I could see them in the spotter. They were messing around. The one particular one was just super massive, and you could tell he was the lead ram. Anytime another smaller ram would get close to him, his testosterone was flying high. He would headbutt him. He was rubbing trees. He was headbutting the ground. He's just a freak. He's getting prepped for the rut. He could feel it coming, I think. And anyway, it started to get dark. Sun was going down, and they started feeding, heading down canyon toward the bench that I pointed out originally when we walked in before we saw the tent. And so I kind of looked at Tom and Adam, if I remember right, and I'm just like, we gotta formulate a plan, like I said, to kill this thing. We checked the weather. We found out legal shooting light, and I said, whatever it is, we have to be in position in our comfortable range to shoot this ram the minute that it gets daylight. We're going to be in position. We're going to walk in the dark with lights behind the ridge where people can't see us coming. We're not going to wake them up, and that the rams aren't going to see us or hear us. So,
but all that was formulated with base map. We started pulling out the phone.
Yeah, we started pulling out the phone, and we used the, what's that called? The remote marker. We made a marker where the sheep was because we could see it. We could see the bench on topo that I looked at earlier with my eyeballs, and we drew a line across a canyon, and it was between 800 and 900 yards. We're like, okay, we can do that. So we backed out. We left one part out to the story. Before we did that, I said, let's go shoot your gun. That's going to be the most important part of this trip, is to verify your gun at 9,000 feet elevation, because I've had it happen before in Wyoming. You get really high, your ballistics and the rangefinders and whatever the scenario can be off a little bit. So let's just go verify and make sure. So we did that, and Adam shot it like 600-something, just nailed it, shot it 800 something, nailed it, shot at 1200 something, had some wind drift, but nailed it. Every time his elevation was perfect. So we're like, wow, this gun is dialed. We can do 800.
Seven some from Gunworks. That gun seven just some. Drives tacks. It's amazing.
It's a tack driver. So we made our plan, regardless of what those people were doing. It didn't matter. We were going to be in position to shoot right at daylight. And we were going to hope that the rams were in a place that we would be able to see them. So we actually didn't even stay till dark and watch the rams. We knew, we said, let's get back, let's get a good meal, and let's leave, let's get set our alarms for 2:30 in the morning and do that nasty walk. We also used base maps to draw lines in our route. We looked at it in the daylight on the hillside and drew a line on our map saying, okay, we're going to walk above that scree slope, below that scree slope, side hill at 7,800 feet or whatever it was, all the way to that bench, and be sitting on this side of the ridge with our headlamps until it just starts to get daylight. We'll peek over, we'll find an opening to set the gun up in where we've got a visual of the hillside, and we'll start glassing like madman as soon as it gets daylight.
Yeah, that was the plan of getting up and walking 3.5 hours in the dark, and it almost worked out better because if we would have came off that ridge with no tent, you're just kind of right on this A-frame, this open face, this ridge across the canyon, and sheep aren't dumb, you know, and they'll see headlamps coming down, and it's loud, it's noisy, everything's dry. So we drop down, and we try and get below this ridge where this camp is. We're trying to not sound like herds of elephants, but it's loud, there's scree, there's boulders, everything's dry, and a lot of blowdown, and so we're sneaking through their headlamps. To go a mile took almost 2 hours. And so it was about 3.5 hours in the dark walking in there. And then we just barely creep up with just kind of our headlamps in our hands, with almost your finger covering the whole light, just to sneak up and say, okay, this isn't good. Let's back off, put our headlamps on, Because, I mean, it's still in sheep country. It's steep and rocky. You can't just hike around in the dark. No trails at this point. And remember,
at this point, we're 800 yards from the sheep, so we don't want the sheep to see us or hear us or see our headlamps. Quiet. So we're still trying to be...
But we're in a new place we've never been, and Trav's like, that looks like a good bench from a half mile or a mile away. And we're trying to find a spot in the dark to look across the canyon where we can shoot where we think the sheep might be, which is pretty tough. But we found a spot. Trav kind of got set up, and then while they were getting kind of ready to go off of like a sniper position with spotting scopes and cameras, and Tom's trying to clear spots for me to shoot for different lanes, I kind of just start doing circles and finding different avenues and different angles to shoot, because there's timber in front of us that if the sheep are over here, I might need to move to this place, but it's a steep hillside.
Yeah, there's one opening through the trees. We didn't have, we couldn't find an opening that was just, you know, a shooting lane for the whole hillside.
Yeah, and
so we had to find multiple setups.
It's a steep hill.
As it was getting light, and we couldn't see yet, but you could see the ground.
Yeah, it's a steep hill. It's 45 degrees, and so the only shooting you're getting is like kind of a washed out tree well, because I got to be flat with a bipod or some kind of platform. I'm not shooting 800 yards off a tripod or shooting sticks or something. But yeah. Then what happened, Tom?
What happened? Oh, so it was getting really light, and
Adam was glassing like a madman. I think Adam and I were both actually pretty inefficient glassers, because I looked down at him at one point, and his binos are going up and down the hillside so fast, I don't think he could focus on anything.
I think we were all,
my heartbeat was moving up.
We were all frantically looking for the sheep.
And we have no clue.
Because we didn't know where the other people were.
Yeah, we didn't know where the other people were coming from, if how they were hunting.
But you saw a light, too, or one of us did.
Way on the other side. So I think they were actually hunting the sheep from the other side of the hill. But it was just, we had no clue. They got spotters. You know, we had no clue what was going on.
We just wanted it. It was already shooting, legal shooting light, and we hadn't spotted the sheep yet. So we were just frantically looking, like, where are they at? They're not in the same spot that we last saw them.
About to have a heart attack.
And Travis, and explain my type of setup for binos. Travis and Adam have, like, the best Suaros out there. And I have this cheap old 2000, I don't know, like a decade old Suaro. Sorry, not a Suaro, a Vortex.
Vortex, so, that are scratched up.
That are scratched up. I need probably, I know they have this warranty thing. I should just get them sent in and see if they'll fix them up a little bit. But anyways, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, Travis, I think I see a sheep butt. And he's like, do you think or do you know? And I'm looking, I'm like, it moved, so it's a sheep. And so we all got eyes on it, and it was the one that Adam was after, which was like, all right. So then now it's go time. And
the mood that changed in my mind from being frantically stressed to like, okay, you're about to be on the trigger, freaking out, but in a different way. When Tom's like, I see the ram, and I'm just like, oh!
Yeah, time to go.
Time to perform.
And that's when teamwork really took over, because everyone knew their positions, and we didn't even have to talk. It was just like a fluid machine. Trav's like, I'm video. Tom's like, got the range, and I'm looking for the ram to see where he's going to go and which one he is. And, you know, I'm still freaking out, because I'm like, most sheep hunters come from the top. You want to kill a ram, you stay quiet, you come from above them, and you kill them. We didn't know if these guys were going to try and shoot across the canyon as well, if they had our same plan. But turns out they were sending a guy around and going to radio the guy down to where the sheep was. And there's a ridge trail, and he was in the dark an hour before light, and then we lost his light, so we didn't know where he was, what his position was. And so I'm on the gun, get set up. Luckily, this ram, the lead ram was much larger than the other two, so it was easy to distinguish. Getting set up. I'm calm, except I can see my heart rate in the scope. And we did the gun work shooting course, and they said, that's fine. You just want to shoot. As you exhale, you know, you're hopefully the bullet's going to launch in that respiratory pause. And I was going off that. I did 3 or 4 dry fires on the sheet. They felt great. And Trav said, you know, I'm not trying to rush you, but that ram's in a great spot broadside. And so I'm like, okay, well, now I'm really freaking rushed. But, you know, I better get it together. And
because at any minute, we're kind of expecting a gunshot. We don't know where the other people are, for one. And for two, that's exactly what to do, is do practice trigger pulls. And on our way out there, when we watched the ram the night before, I was telling Adam, I'm like, we're going to have to wait for a good broadside shot, because we watched that thing for a half hour, and he was only broadside for a very short amount of time. Every time I was watching him, he was up the hill. It's steep, and he liked to feed facing up the hill. It's just like, it's a little easier to stand that way and feed on brush because it's steep. And when he would turn, he would just turn broadside, and then he would face up the hill again. And so we had that conversation on the way out, and literally as Adam's making practice shots, he was making practice shots on another ram, weren't you?
Yeah, because he couldn't see the lead ram.
He couldn't see the one. And I was just like watching the – well, I don't know why you couldn't see him, but
– oh, he was panicked.
He was panicked. Yeah. Or either that or he didn't want to stare at the horn. So he's making trigger practice pulls on a smaller ram, and the big ram is right out in the open, like neck stretched out perfectly broadside, standing on a bench. And I'm just like visualizing him dropping right there. And so I'm like, yeah, I don't mean to – rush you, but he's perfect right now. And so Adam does a couple more sugar pulls, and then of course the ram starts to walk. And then what happened?
And I'm kind of, usually I can hold the adrenaline. I used to like kind of lose it, like a little kid, but now I can hold it together pretty well. But I was losing it, guys, just to be honest here. I mean, it's a big sheep. There's other pressures, all these factors. I have all this strain from everyone else in my life. Like, you gotta do nothing until you get a ram on the ground, and I got the wife saying, I want to hunt moose and caribou, and my kids have caribou tags in Alaska, and I want to go moose hunting and all this stuff, and Trav's got a deer tag, and we have elk tags that we drew, and I'm just like, man, I got to kill this ram. If I don't shoot this and I screw this up, the world will end. And Trav's saying, go now, and then he's stuck behind a tree. So I'm like, okay, I rack around in, I've practiced on the other ones when he's behind the bush, I'm good, the crosshairs are always on the sheep, I can just see my heart rate move, and I'm probably 90 to 110 beats a minute right now, no joke. Laying on the ground, just breathing normal, just my heart's racing, right?
Tom could see his heart beating out of the back of his
out
chest.
Out of the back of my chest. And so,
out of spine.
But we don't have time for me to, you know, calm down. And at this point, what did you say, Tom?
What?
To calm me down.
Oh, I have some little, it's called Rescue, little natural supplement. And I was like, ah, you need a little Rescue.
He's like, ah, no, you didn't a say sucker, Rescue. He said, sucker. Adam, do you want a sucker?
Yeah. As I'm clicking like, the safety
like,
off,
this
he's
isn't
like,
the time yeah. for a sucker. You're going to have to pull it together without a sucker.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to chill him out a bit so that we can make a good, clean shot.
Tom's so goofy. He's like, hey, do you need a sucker? I got these sweet lollipops. Like, Tom, I got to kill this ram first. Hold on.
I promise there's no marijuana in it.
Yeah. It wasn't a weed sucker. Or anything, and so I get position, the ram's feeding, he finally gets broadside, I take three ranges, I always do that, shooting that Gunworks 7 saw, their new BR4, it's got all this dope in it, we've checked it, zeroed the gun, it came zeroed, made sure it was good with my can, and shot at 9,000, I'm like, okay, I am rock solid, I have the most confidence ever in this gun. There's thermals blowing down the canyon, so we figured 2 to 3 miles an hour, so I give it that much. I think I gave it a minute to the right for wind, held straight on. I said, Trav, you ready? And he said, yep, it looks good. No weight. He's walking. I said, okay. And it's hard to tell. Like, I've heard you don't want to shoot a buck when his head's down because he might be feeding. You want to shoot him when his head's up. But the sheep, they're constantly grazing until they bed. And it's not like he's going to put his head up, and we don't want to yell at him to lift his head or anything, so... Right about the time I got the trigger preloaded.
We said yes, no, like at least 5 times. Like it's like, okay, shoot, he's broadside, and then there'd be a pause. Adam was controlling his breathing. He's about to shoot. I'm waiting for the gun to go off, and then I could see the mannerism of the sheep about to take a step. So I'm like, no, stop. And he would take a step. He'd stop again broadside, or he'd turn wrong.
Then I gained 6 beats per minute each time that happened.
So we did that probably 5 or 6 times before it's like, okay, you know.
Now it's time. The sheep's good. He's still broadside. It's like, okay, are you ready? Wind's still good. Tom, you on him? Yeah, and it's like, okay, I preload the trigger, set it like 1.5 pounds, 2 pounds. I'm breathing out. I put a little bit of pressure on the trigger. I'm just holding my spot. I'm squeezing. I'm pulling, pressing the trigger to the rear. And right when the trigger's about to break, Trav says, no, wait.
Because he's taking a step. I can see him.
And I don't know psychologically what happened. It was like as my brain... was continuing to send the senses to my finger that clicked in my mind of, oh no, I panicked or something, and I don't know what happened, but the shot hit, what do you think, 2 feet high?
Well, the ram took a step downhill, and he shot, and he was a little right, but it was hard to spot, it was hard to think of all that was going on at that particular time, because the ram took a step and moved, and then the bullet hit the dirt. And so, to me, it looked high because it was over the ram, but he walked downhill, and it was to the right. I didn't call the right side, but I said it was high. Shoot again. So the ram, I said miss. It was high. Ram turns the other way. Adam compensates for the height. Told him aim a foot lower than whatever you did last time. He shoots. He hits the ram.
But I didn't aim. Yeah, we still, I mean, Gunworks told us how to do that. We still, it's hard in the pressure of the moment to do that. But I think I aimed, instead of center of the ram, I probably aimed at his belly. I should have aimed a little lower. But Trav couldn't see the shot that well, how high it was.
Because the ram, yeah, it was hard to judge as the ram was moving where he, well, I didn't know where his crosshairs were at the time he pulled the trigger.
Yeah, so. I didn't adjust the minutes of angle. I just held lower because I'm like, okay, maybe there's an updraft on that side of the canyon. Maybe something's weird. Did the rangefinder read the temperature wrong or what's happening? But
didn't know, but it was high.
It was high. We needed to fix it right now, and I didn't pull it high. I knew I was good. I felt good, so I held low. Second shot, boom, Trav says, you hit him. And I said, okay. So we got a bullet in the ram, but he's not – sheep aren't tough, and I expect this thing to roll. I mean
– I could tell it was far back, and so I knew instantly. I thought, it's going to kill him, but – it might take him a little bit, so we need to be smart about it and just try and get another bullet in him. But again, they don't really stop. So as he was going down through the trees,
walking,
he just would never stop until it was kind of a cluster at that point. We were trying to move. You know, the ram would go out of sight. We'd have to completely move our setup, all three of us, rangefinder, Adam on the gun, scope.
And remember, my setup with the first shot, I was in a tree well, we had moved rocks, I had 30 minutes to prep my shooting platform, and had a couple other ones. Well, those couple other ones quickly went out the window, and now the sheep's moving, Trav's grabbing his stuff, we're throwing rangefinders and binos at Tom. Tom's like a Sherpa carrying 19 things in his arms. Andy has to video, we're screaming at Tom, Tom's doing everything, Trav's video, and I'm trying to get the gun and keep shells and reload as we're running, and we're running down to the left, the ram's running down to the left. And now I have to find another tree well to shoot from, and there's nothing. There's like a steep hillside with a dead down tree, and I'm setting the bipod on that to try and kill the ram because we think he's getting away. We don't know how wounded he is, and I've always been under the mindset if the thing's standing up, I'm shooting.
Yeah, and at one point, the ram stopped in an opening, and there was timber all around, and there was one little opening. And I said, I have a visual on him right now.
Tom found him first. Tom found him. Thanks, Tom.
In this little opening, I said, I have a visual on him. I know it's the same ram you shot. That's another important thing. This is where teamwork really kicked in. We had three rams running together. We had to make sure that it was the same ram, which was noticeable. His mass was noticeable to the other rams. We knew what he looked like.
But then he was also shaking. I mean, he looked like he was about ready to die right
now. He looked like he was about ready to tip over. So he walked in this opening. We got a new range on him. Took Adam a little while to get a setup because we were on a 45-degree slope. And he could have taken a rush shot, and I'm like, I got a visual, like, if you shoot, he's going to run, and we might not see him again. He's going to go in the timber. And so he started digging at the hill like he was going to lay down. I thought, let's let him lay down there, unless you have an absolute perfect shot. And he was digging like he was going to lay down, and all of a sudden, I don't know if one of the other rams that was with him took off or what, but he just whirled and ran down the hill. And I'm like, well, hindsight, I guess we should have tried to get another bullet in him there. But we didn't. So
Trav's like, well, guess you should have shot. Let's move.
We had to remove again. And then the ram comes down at this point. This whole story, the ram went a total about 350 yards. So he's about 350 yards lower on the hill. And, he walks into another opening. Again, we had a shot, but there was a ram behind him. So we were just playing it safe. We were trying to do everything we could in the stress of the moment. It's like, don't shoot now. We got to be clear of the other rams. He's got to be broadside.
It's already a cluster. We're just trying not to make it
any more of a cluster. And the ram goes behind this little bit of a tree. But Adam's at this point, he says, I'm solid. We got a really good range.
No, he bedded before that.
He did bed and then he got up.
Yeah, he bedded and we were going to shoot. And it's like, no, let's just leave him. He's sick.
Gonna die.
He's going to die. And then he gets up and then he runs. And I'm like, Trav, I thought he was dying. He's like, I don't know.
So anyway, then he's standing in the trees, and Adam's like, he's in the trees, I can't see. At this point, he had already bedded and got up two or three times on his own without pressure, so I'm like, you've got to get another bullet in him. And he was looking down the hill. He couldn't see his head, but I could see the other two rams, and I watched the big one walk in, so I knew it was him. And Adam's like, can't shoot. There's a little, you know, tree branches in the way, and I'm like, oh. It's as good as it's going to get, because as soon as he goes over into this draw, we're not going to see him again.
But the trees were 50 yards in front of him, and that bullet's dropping pretty good. Now we're at, like, what, 600 yards?
Yeah, and that's not necessarily something you want to do all the time, but when you got a wounded ram, and you got to get another bullet in him. So, and at this point, we already messed up by not shooting the first time. So at this point, I'm like, send one in there. Let's try and get another bullet in him. Adam gets a good solid rest, shoots the ram.
I aim way lower this time because I know the elevation's not working for whatever reason. So I aim a foot to a foot and a half below the vitals.
And we can't understand that because the day before the gun, the rangefinder was perfect. So I don't know. We really don't know if the thermals were really bad. We honestly still a little mind blown by that. But I'll finish the story and then I'll explain that. So then the ram, Adam sends one in there, and I couldn't really see exactly the hit, but the ram comes running out of the bottom and kind of piles up around this corner and on this little cliff edge. This is where teamwork really came into play because we were all set up in different spots just looking for a little tiny opening, and this whole time that this ram ran 350 yards through the trees, and we had to set up, I think, a matter of four different times. Somebody usually always had an eye on it. It was just a second or two, the ram would go behind a tree we wouldn't have an eye on. But we would explain, we were yelling landmarks back and forth to each other, like, right by that snag's the last place I saw him. Don't take your eyes off that, I've got to move.
Don't Tom touch my spotter.
Tom would keep an eye on it, I would move the spotter over, I'd get eyes on it again, then everybody would move. And that was critical to retrieving this ram, because if we wouldn't have done that, and this ram would have gotten into the timber without us seeing it, and we would have just been like, well, you know, we're going to have to go look for that ram over there and not followed through, there's a good chance we would have never found him. So we were just, like, so focused on not taking our eyes off of that thing until he was dead. And so anyway, this ram, I lost sight of him after Adam shot because there was a tree in my view. Tom sees him shoot out the bottom. And Tom goes, he fell over. I think he fell over right there. And I move my spotter over, and I get the spotter on him. I had a hard time seeing him because there was this one little opening before the other two rams ran into the timber. And all I could see was there was a ram horn sticking up with his head up. And I saw him take his last couple breaths and lay over. And I'm just like, dude, you hit him. You finished him off there. He's dead. And Adam, it was just joy at that point. He's about to have a heart attack.
200 beats per minute at this point. It's just insane. The stress. I'm apologizing. I don't know what's going on. And after the first shot, my adrenaline just dumped at this point. So I've just, gone downhill. It sounded like a fiasco. I mean, we shot a lot of times. I'm trying to get this thing dead. I don't want to wound the animal. I got a shot that's too far back to be lungs. There might be a little blood, but there's going to be guts on open, dry hillside. How are we going to follow that in the rocks? We're just going to be dry tracking.
And some of you are thinking, I know, that's why I don't like long range. That's why I don't like long range. We've had this conversation before. I know between all of us, we've killed well over 100 big game animals. A lot of them have been long range. Before there was long range, we killed everything with 3x9 Leopold scopes and archery. So we've been all over the place, and we've talked about it before. We're like, percentages, we have wounded less animals long range than we have close range because you're usually rushed. There's one running through the trees, whatever the reason. So this was a cluster. There's no doubt. We've had a couple clusters in our life, but out of 100 animals, this was probably three of the clusters that I can think of. And it was a cluster, but we worked together as a team. We spotted it correctly. He made the shot and then we finished it off, working together as a team and watching where it went, and we got the ram.
I feel like that was vital.
We would love for it to work out better, but what's your saying, Adam? Everything's not in life, isn't
it? It's not sunshine, rainbows, and, you know, unicorn farts, you know? It's just like, I would have loved to see that thing high shoulder and just sack and be high-fiving, and that's what I was expecting. I was super confident in the gun, and
the gun's on, the rangefinder's on, but we had some crazy.
It was either environmental factors or just me,
but something
kept pushing the bullet high, and I don't know if it was early in the morning. There shouldn't have been a thermal rising up. Maybe the wind over there was blowing the canyon up, and it was catching that bottom of the drag, and it pushed it up. I don't know.
Or it could be laying on an awkward hillside, kind of binding the gun. We've tested that before. If the gun is bound, he didn't think it was, but you just never know. If it's bound a little bit, you're kind of squeezing it, you're white-knuckling it, and you shoot, it can throw the bullet, you know? So we don't know. But we know we did what we had to do, and at this point we see the ram and he's dead, and it's that relief of he's yours, he's down, let's go get him.
Hand me a lollipop, Tom. It's time to calm down.
You know, and I always say that too, like with long range, it's not like we try and find the longest possible distance shot to go get one down. Like my thing is, I got the gun for capability of it if I have to, but always get closer if you can. You know, if there was a way to get closer, and we found a way after it got daylight, but we didn't know it ahead of time, we would have got closer if we could have. And so anytime that you're, it doesn't matter if you got a long range gun and you practiced out to 1,000 yards all the time. If you think, oh, I can knock off 200 yards,
do it.
Because, yep. You know, 1,000 yards, there's a lot of variances. I always say it's like with my gun, it was kind of double. Like, say the gun dropped roughly 10 feet at 800 yards, it almost doubled that to 1,000. So it'd be dropping 20 feet at 1,000 yards. It kind of halves again if you get down to around 500 or 600. So, you know, the chance of error, whether it's thermals, human error, or equipment, completely is cut in half from 1,800 and then cut in half again from 800 to 500 or 600. So get as close as you can so that you're not ending up with a little bit of a cluster like we had.
And I told Travis that. He said, I'd love to shoot this ram 500 under. That's my preferred thing. But we thought those guys were going to be long ranging across the canyon from somewhere we didn't know about.
Or coming down from the top with thermals that were going to bust the rams. Either way, that ram was going to get either busted out of there that day. And we didn't want to be the ones that would screw it up and the ram get away and nobody get it. But we did what we thought we had to do to kill the ram.
Yeah.
That's what we did. And that was our best option. And it didn't work out perfectly, but we did kill the ram. And we got him in the back of the bag.
Yeah, and I think that just shows, like, if it's not perfect, that's not the time to panic. We all worked together really good as a team and family, and everyone knew their part, did their part, and wanted to see the animal die, and we were all working for that because we owe the respect to the animal, too. I don't want to watch anything suffer. I want one-shot kills all the time, and I've had a lot of those in the last 5 to 6 years, you know, and it's been awesome. So I was due for one of these, and it sucks that it happened, but we just stuck with it.
And as we tell this story, this is a long story, but I got to verify something there. I bet you from the time that his first shot, that ram got a bullet, he ran 350 yards, and by the time he was dead was under 5 minutes. I guess it was probably 3. You know, so there wasn't a lot of suffering going on. But if we would have panicked and we'd have been like, oh, you blew it. I can't believe it. You hit him too far back and just, you know, got into that mindset, that ram would have went over there and died and we wouldn't have been able to find it. But we didn't lose focus. And we worked together, and it took all three of us. It would have been very hard with just me and Adam Tom and Adam. It took all three of us to make that happen. And when we could visually see him in an opening dead, it was a well-accomplished moment, even though there were some stressful times.
It all happened 20 minutes after first light. And anyone who's looked through optics knows you don't take in a lot of daylight into an optic until you have at least probably a half hour to an hour after first light. And we're looking for dark gray animals in the shade of trees, and somehow Tom just keeps picking them up, and we're like, okay, good. Travis on the spotter and finds the animal, and yeah, he's dead. So I'm watching in the spotter, and I can see just little parts of him, and I can watch him. He's not breathing. We sit there, we calm down, and then we have a long ways to go to get him. It's steep. We had to drop, I don't know, I think we dropped 1,000 from where we shot. We went up 400. Crossed a nice little creek, super dry country, and all of a sudden you just have springs come out of the mountain with like super ice cold 35 degree water, soaked our feet in there, got cooled down, crossed the creek, and as huge as this country is in central Idaho, roadless, everything like that, we run into a guy that came off the top. We're assuming he's the headlamp we had seen. And he tells us, yeah, my guys are on the other side. I have two guys over there, and I got two guys up here. And I was coming over the top. So what happened? We're like, oh, we killed the ram. He's like, oh, congratulations. And he was happy for us.
He was good about it.
Yeah, we shook his hand. And I expected people to be kind of bitter, but I was hopeful they would be happy. And I told Trav going in, I said, this is a game of chess. And I said, the best man's going to win. I just hope that I'm the best man. And if I'm not, you know, I'm going to take it like a man, and I'm going to be a little disappointed, but that's hunting. And we're public land.
And we're still going to be happy for him. Like, let's say we set up and
then we had this conversation ahead of time.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. If they ended up shooting the ram, Like, we would have been happy for them. We still want to come up and we'd want to see the ram. Like, we'd be just excited for them. I mean, not just excited for them. We prefer to get it ourselves. But, I mean, it's all about being a good sport about the whole thing, you know? It's just the unfortunate truth of public land. It's competitive.
Yep. Especially with the sheep these guys had seen, and now the wolves have pushed those sheep out. We got multiple tag holders with multiple glassers going after this ram.
So long story short, yeah, these rams were in a different area than where we saw them the day before. Everybody was glassing for the one particular ridge that they were on. They were a ridge line down and further down by the creek when Tom spotted them. And so I asked the guy straight up, did your guys that are helping you see them? And he said, no, that nobody saw nothing this morning. And he was coming down the ridge anyway with his thermals going down. Regardless, he was making a loop coming down and going up. So if we hadn't shot the ram, I mean, there was a chance he would have stumbled onto it, but not very good with the thermals and where the rams were at. He was coming down a ridge to set up where they were the day before, and there's a good chance that just would have been blown out and nobody would have got it.
And those guys had camped pretty close to these sheep. I don't know if they had heard them, seen headlamps. I backed out even before where their camp was the morning before because I was too close for thermals. Now you got three guys there with odors and scent and cooking. These rams were super
that's
patterned.
Possible why they moved to the drainage.
Yeah, they would only move 100 yards from morning to evening, and they would sit there, and then you'd find them the next day, they'd be right there. This time they had moved a half mile down the drainage, maybe to some more remote timber and cliffy stuff, and do a whole new set of cliffs. And like Travis said, those guys had never even seen them, and this guy was coming off the top regardless, which I didn't understand, because it's like, this is, you got to really play it smart. When you got like one big muley buck or one sheep, you make it count. And he was coming in, and he had actually seen the two smaller rams that after mine died, that they ran up the hill. And he said, yeah, they weren't quite good enough. And we had seen their tracks, and then, yeah, he kind of went back up to where they were to pack up camp and head back, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like, well, I got to back up a little bit, too, and say, you know, they said, these guys were great guys. We met them. They were nice. They were hardcore. But, you know, they sent a tent out. They set a tent out there right on the glassing point. And, you know, we were discouraged when we first saw that. I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, I'm like, we just got to hunt like they're not here. And they're going to do the same thing. But I'm just telling you out there, if you go set a tent on an animal, it doesn't make it your animal. It doesn't say, I dibs this animal. My tent is right here. I'm going after it. Like, it's not going to stop me. I can tell you that. I'm going to formulate a plan to try and get it regardless if your tent's there or not.
And I'm used to it.
And that might sound bad, but it's a matter of we're coming off with a ram, or we're sitting up there right now with a ram that's blown out and have no backup plan. Everybody is trying for to be successful, and just everybody's got to do their best to do it, you know?
Yeah, and I told Trav I'm used to that in Alaska, that the youth sheep hunt, there's outfitters and stuff that put up tents, dummy tents on a runway, just so people won't go in there and kill the rams on the youth sheep hunt before they have a client show up on August 10th, or guys show up and put tents out on the 8th and the 9th, and it's like, well, you're not hunting, you know? You're not doing anything but putting a tent here, or even if you're camped here. It's like, we're going after an animal, and like Travis said, you can't just call dibs on an animal. It's public land. We're all going for the same goal. May the best man win.
Everybody's been watching it. And, yeah, we had that conversation. Adam, if you're not the best man tomorrow, you're going to cry. He's like, I'm going to be disappointed, but no, I'm going to still go shake their hand.
Yeah.
And they did a good job. I want to see the ram regardless. So back to we crossed the creek. We got our feet. We put our burning feet. You know, we got 200-gram insulant boots, and it's 90 degrees out. So had to cool our feet down in the creek and then head up the hill to go look at the ram. And we marked a remote waypoint once again using base maps camera feature where it's got a crosshair.
That's the most epic feature for when you have an animal down. Like, we use it for a lot of things like planning routes and stuff, but the most common way people can use that feature is when you shoot an animal. What do we used to do? Take a picture with your phone and be like, go to this tree?
Pretty much, yeah, do that. And then base maps, I'm friends with I knew the founder of Base Maps before it really even went public, when it was just an idea. And I went to a couple meetings where it was so small, there was just 10 of us in a room talking about ideas. And as he grew with Base Maps and started coming out with these features, he came out with that feature where there was a remote marker and you sighted down a line with the compass and you'd take a range. So you'd range across the canyon, say it was 560 yards. You'd line your phone up with a compass and an arrow and you would hit OK. So it takes the distance, it takes your heading, and it marks a waypoint over there. I ate dinner with him one night and I'm like, what if, this is just an idea, but what if you could figure out a way to do that in your camera? Like with a crosshair. And we were just kind of brainstorming ideas. He was coming up with ideas. I was coming up with ideas. This was after it was already established. And he's like, I think that's doable. He gets with his team, and before you know it, I get a text from him, hey, we got this new feature out. Check it out. And now, like Adam said, it's incredible. You take a range. You have to have a rangefinder. Say it's 1,200 yards. You can take your camera. And then it goes. You type in the yardage, and then it goes to your camera. It uses your camera. It's got a crosshair. You can zoom in on it, and you can hit set. So you put that crosshair right where the dead ram was across the canyon, and you hit set, and it takes the distance, and it references the azimuth angle of your compass heading, and it marks you a waypoint. And sometimes it's a little before or after, I'll say that, but it's always in line with where you were. So in this case, it was maybe 75 yards behind the ram because it's kind of looking at a hillside. But we went right to the ram. We got there, and it's like, okay, yeah, it was right over here.
It's right on the edge of the cliff. We knew that.
On the edge of the cliff. And so the huge, when you're in the timber and you don't know where you're going, huge feature.
So then we get across the creek. Luckily, the ram was wounded, so we knew he was going down. He was going down towards water. Dives right on this cliff face. Do a little rock climbing. My height, my fear of heights got a little better. You guys a little impressed? I was trying to make you proud. Trying not to chicken out, but we also had a ram down, so I'm trying to climb through these rocks and stuff. And we get up there, and we walk up this rock face, and we peel over the top, and Tom is behind me at the camera. He actually spotted him first. I'm still just, adrenaline's going crazy. We're huffing and puffing. It's hot now. It's like 90 degrees and sun's out. And see the ram. And before this, I've seen a couple bighorns mounted. I've never held like a Euro or anything like that from bighorns. They just obviously look really massive. I've killed a couple dall sheep. Trav's been on a dall sheep kill with Tana, and so has Tom. And they're thin. They're considered a thin horn sheep. Like a big dall sheep is 13.5, 14-inch bases, where a big horn is like 16. When we come around the corner, this thing is just gigantic. Just carries the mass all the way through. He drops really low. And in the video, you know, we're looking at everyone gets their hands on this thing. You know, I grab him first, and I'm just looking at him, just like, just kind of in awe. This thing is just such a beautiful, impressive animal. He's old. Big Roman nose.
Nose is all banged up from banging heads, you know, missing, hitting horns on his nose.
Like, yeah, he's got like
scarred up.
A growth on his Roman nose and stuff.
Teeth are half missing.
Side note, he's got a huge nutsack. just huge. And Tom's like, look at that thing.
Everything's big.
Yeah, put me to shame.
Yeah. And so this thing's crazy. And I guess I am kind of a numbers guy, and I go to Trav trying to not be like that douchebag, and I'm like, I'm not a numbers guy, but I got to put a tape on him, because I want to know how my animal compares. I'm a man, and I want to know how it compares to this guy's, and this guy's.
Well, and I think it's just a curiosity thing. The whole time, we thought maybe he was 165, which you got to have some sort of a standard when you go a new unit. You know, are you going to shoot a forked horn, or are you going to shoot a four-point? And Adam's like, based off of looking at sheep, like, I'd be happy with 155 or 160 or bigger, you know? And so we thought that this ram was about 165. The guy that we met in the creek bottom after we had already killed it, and he opened his mouth, he's like, I think, yeah, that's a good ram. I think he's about 165.
And I asked that kid, I said, hey, now that we're tagged out, let's drop the weird animosity. Like, what are you guys seeing? He's like, oh, we got two big ones, this one and another one over there. That one over there, we can't turn up again. That's why I came here. We think this one might be a touch bigger.
So 165-ish.
It was, yeah, and he thought 165, but he doesn't have a big sheep background and stuff. But everyone's got phone scope these days and pictures, and they had an outfitter who was a sheep guide in their group. And so it's like, I think he'd be able to tell. But we have even sent a bunch of pictures to guides with a lot of sheep knowledge and everything, and everyone thought 161, 165. I thought he might touch 170, but I really didn't care. I thought he looked cool. I was going to shoot him, and that's my first impression, and I really wanted
one we saw. So just going to shoot it regardless if he scored what his score was.
Yeah.
Cool-looking ram.
Yeah, and it was and you can shoot any ram. I could have shot a two-year-old. I'm like, this one looks cool. I want to shoot it. It's opening day. We got a lot of pressure. These sheep are going to get spooked around, and we put a tape on the left horn, and a lot of these ones broom off quite a bit, and I looked at get an Excel spreadsheet and see all the rams killed for different units and look at the bases, the age, and all kinds of stuff, and even kill location. And I looked at all this stuff, and I was averaging like 6 to 7 years old. This ram ended up, we think we have him at 10 and a half, whatever you want to call it, and his left side was 37 and three quarter, and he was 15 and three quarter on a base. But he just, that's a good like 170 ram, maybe low 170s, but he, I don't know. I'm acting like I know what I'm talking about. I'm just guessing here.
But he holds his mass.
He holds the mass.
Which gives you the score.
Yeah, you sheep, you get the length of each horn, you get the base circumference, and then you take three more measurements. So say like this one is 37 and three quarter. You take the base, which was 15 and three quarter, and then you take basically 9 more inches or 9 and change, and you go down the horn from the base of the skull 9 inches. You make a little pencil mark. You take that circumference. And then you keep doing that all the way down a couple more times. But when you go 9 inches down the horn, he loses like 1 inch.
So it's in increments of 4, right?
Yeah. So you take, it was like 15 and three quarter, 14 and a half, and then like 13 and then 10. It was just like he carries this mass all the way down. He drops low. He's long. He's broomed off. He's heavy. He's dark. And just, it's amazing looking animal.
So we get one side added up, and what did I say?
I'm measuring. Tom's adding up on the one side, and Trav's just looking at me. We're adding these up, like 37, 16, 10, this, and it gets to like 87 or 88. We still have to add up all the eighths because you add stuff in eighths, and so it'd be like 37 and 6/8. We have to go back and add a couple inches, and it comes out to like 92, and Travis and I, he's a carpenter, and I just got done building, so you got to be pretty good at simple math. And Trav looks at me with wide eyes. He's like, 92? And I'm like, Trav. He's like, 92? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, 92? And because we're looking at 92 times 2 is like a massive 180 Missouri Breaks, you know, Snake River, Idaho, giant sheep. And the thing looks pretty symmetrical. We get to the other side. It ends up being like 91, and this ram, I mean, just rough scored from people who don't really know what we're doing, but pretty dang close, got to 183 inches and 1/8. And we're just like, what is this thing?
Where did it come from?
These kind of rams don't live in central Idaho. Like, a 170 is like top tier. I talked to a guy, and he knows a lot about sheep, hunted this unit, and he's involved with Idaho Wild Sheep, and he's like, 5 rams... over 175 have ever been killed out of that unit, ever, in the history of fish and game taking data and stuff from sheep. So I don't know if this ram is the biggest killed out of that unit ever. It's definitely in the top 3, I'm guessing, and we don't know where this freak of nature came from, but
we didn't know what we were shooting at, but
yeah, probably a good thing I didn't know, because I was losing it.
So anyway, the funny joke yesterday was Adam's like, I'm not a numbers guy, but I need to pull the tape out. And then on video, he's like, I'm not a numbers guy, but the left horn's 37 three quarters, 15 seven eighths. And after that, I'm just like, you're not a numbers guy, huh? And so it's not a bad thing, but we were definitely making fun of him yesterday. Like, you are a numbers guy. So for those of you that don't know him, Adam's a numbers guy, and it makes him the best pilot I know. He's smart when it comes to figuring out building materials, because the guy's brain is like a sponge. He can take numbers in. He remembers it. He doesn't forget them. He can, like he was just talking, throwing all these numbers out, even lost me, and I'm sitting right here. Like, he remembers all these numbers and all these statistics of ram horn length and how to score them and diameter of their horns just by looking at Excel sheets. So whether he's playing it up or not, he is a small genius inside. He's good with numbers. There's nothing wrong with that.
I got 3 skills. I can fly airplanes, kill animals, and I'm pretty much Rain Man when it comes to sheep. I guess the numbers. So that works out good. So, and then the whole time, Tom's just looking at this thing being a weirdo. He's like, look at the nuts on that thing. Those are huge.
And they're so big, like, we actually had to put rocks in front of him for the picture, because this ram's so big, but he's got such a huge nutsack, we had to, like, cover it with rocks, because it was overtaking the pictures.
And going over, Adam's was like, what are you going to do? What are we going to, because we're kind of looking at our pack, like, holy smoke, we got to pack this thing.
We
this
dropped
is
a bunch
nasty
of gear.
Pack. We dropped a bunch of gear before we left, so it's like, Adam, what are you packing? Is this a full mount? Is it a shoulder mount? He's like, shoulder mount. He's like, I wouldn't full mount something unless it was like around the 180-ish.
Giant.
It's like, okay, so we get over there. He throws his tape on him because he's got it. He's a numbers man. He's got to know. Throws his tape on him. He's 180. What numbers guy? What was it?
183 and 1/8.
183 and 1/8. And he's like, oh, dude, we gotta full cape him now.
Sorry, wife.
I don't even know if she knows yet, but...
Yeah, I told her. But
anyway,
she's happy.
Full things in the back. We ate the meat last night. She tasted excellent. It was a little tough being that old, but, man, really good taste. I could eat that every night. And what a cool ram. What a cool experience.
Yeah, so we took a bunch of pictures. Kind of just... it's heavy, but we were able to 1, 2, 3, pick them up, put them on a rock, get some photos. Get some pictures of the Gunworks gun, get a couple group pictures, and then trap on this really cool tree. They live in a lot of timber, so it's cool to be on a timber bench with these cliffs, this really cool moss in the background. I just got some great angles of them, and from his left, his right. Bighorns don't look impressive straight on. This thing doesn't flare out like a big stone or a thin-horned sheep. He just looks really impressive from the side, and the back is massive. And then we went to town, and... Trav made all the cuts. We're doing life size. I like one guy to make all the cuts just because they do it the same. And if you have one guy in this leg and one guy in this leg, you make it harder. The taxidermist. Trav does all the cuts. Me and Tom get the skinning. We have some video. We put a GoPro up for a time lapse. And what else, Tom?
We loaded her up and packed him down the hill. And then there was a creek. That creek was just ice cold. Like, you could keep your feet in that creek for a couple seconds without them going numb. And we've had a few comments in the past on our videos. People see we use garbage bags with some of the meat, and people are worried about them getting spoiled. And that's not necessarily true. For one, we'll use garbage bags to keep our packs clean. But
for one, we've never spoiled an animal.
We never have spoiled an animal. We've never come off the mountain and the meat was ruined. We've always had good meat.
So what do we do? What's our process?
Put them in game bags, and then we put them in a garbage bag.
But just to keep
our
pack clean.
First thing we want to do is we want to try to cool the meat down as fast as we can. So we packed it down. We went right down to the creek, and we actually kept them in the garbage bag so they wouldn't get soaked, and we just set them in the creek. Just cooled the meat down as fast as we could, but yeah, keep the water off them. And Adam did the same thing with this hide. And we just kind of chilled there for a bit, cool ourselves down, cool the meat down. I don't know how long, like an hour, maybe, or maybe less.
You're just trying to take the heat off. You don't want moisture. We're all using like a contractor bag, and we're just kind of relaxing, getting water again and stuff. And then it was time to go, Tom.
Yep, and then we just went right up the mountain the rest of the way and just took our sweet time, no rush. We're getting older in our age, so.
You left out the part that all of our bags leaked.
And all our, okay, that was, that, we had a little mini leak.
That was
so
depressing.
Adam's hide gained 15 pounds.
No, more than that. It felt like it doubled. The whole thing was slopping wet. The skull was still in it. Didn't feel that bad for Trav and Tommy. Meat doesn't really absorb water, but it still adds weight.
Yeah.
And all of our contractor bags leaked. We're soaking this thing, and it's like, man, it's so stupid.
Yeah, so ideally you want to keep your meat dry and your cape dry. But in this case, it didn't happen, so we had to dry everything out last night. And just, but... like Adam said, his pack was horrible. He's put it on, and he had this one bag. It must have had a pinhole in it. You set him down on a pine needle. That's all it takes, and it gets a pinhole. And so it slowly leaked blood juice out of the cape down his butt crack the whole way up the mountain. On top of profusely sweating, he drank 300 liters of water yesterday.
I had literally... 100-ounce water bladder. I filled three times and emptied it.
That's 300 ounces. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got back to camp and had like 2 Gatorade bottles full of water. So I had pretty much 3 gallons of water. And Tom was walking behind me and just like, looks like you forgot to wipe is what it looks like. And it's just red and brown dripping down my ass crack. Just gross. And it didn't feel that good either. But I got a cranker ram on my back. and we had to go straight vertical.
We got it. Like, it was just long ways.
And Adam's not a numbers guy, but he's like, if my calculations are correct, we did 500 feet elevation in 1 hour. We're going to be up to the top by this time, and we're going to be to the tent by 8. And I think he was off by maybe a half an hour, but pretty dang close for a numbers guy.
Just so everyone knows, I'm never going to live this moment down with Travis the rest of my life. But, yeah, I am. Like, before we even started, I'm, like, looking. I'm, like, because when I'm doing these digs and it's a grind straight up, it wasn't so steep where you could reach your arm straight out and touch.
There's a deer in the road.
Ooh. Wow, there is
life. First wildlife I've seen here.
There's life here. Crazy.
Dodge the wolf.
Yeah, look at it.
Whitetail. In the fawn. Oh, muley, yeah. Two fawns.
Two babies. Yeah, and so I'm looking at the map, and I'm like, okay, if we can do a vertical, there's 1,000 vertical feet. If we can do 300 vertical an hour with this load, hopefully I can stop at least every 100 vertical feet and sit down. And I like to sit and, like, undo my pack. I'm not one of those guys that just sit down, take the break off. If I'm going to relax, I want to relax, almost fall asleep, it seems like. And, yeah, it was like, we'll get to the top 2 or 3 hours, and an hour or two back on the trail. So, yeah, I do a lot of numbers, I guess, but not a numbers guy.
No.
We get up to top. I wasn't even thinking about it. I had some gear at the top, but Trav graciously, selflessly said, I'm going to take all your gear because we shot goats on Kodiak. You took a lot of my stuff, and I don't remember. I don't forget that. I said, okay, well, that was great. Tom was packing the gun, and I just had a wet, sloppy cape that's really top-heavy because those horns probably weigh 30, 35 pounds. Just, they're so massive.
Yeah, so Tom, we just deboned half the ram into my backpack, the other half of the ram into Tom's backpack, and Adam had the full cape and the horns, and we all had split the gear.
Yeah. One thing I always wondered was, you know, I'd hear about these stories of people packing sheep out, and I'm like, how did they do that, pack a whole sheep all these miles? Sheep are very light. I've packed out mule deer heavier than a sheep. Like, I can't.
Yeah, they feel like they have more guts than a deer, but they're body-wise, they got about as much meat as a mule deer, big mature mule deer buck, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, at least, yeah, this was mature ram.
And they looked bloated.
Smaller than I expected, because I haven't been around a lot. Like, I could grab the horns, Adam could grab the back feet, and we could pick them up and move them around for pictures. That's a lot lighter than some animals.
You can't do that with a big mule deer buck or something like that. But yeah, I knew going into it, they're not... They're just kind of short and squatty, and they look bloated just standing there. They're all puffy and everything. They got lots of guts. I don't know if it's a digestive system or they regurgitate cut or something like that. But, yeah, I made it to the top. Could see where those guys had their little glassing point in their tent, and they had obviously packed up and went back. We hit the trail and then worked our way back slowly and made it back to camp and had some sheep backstrap.
And now... We cleaned up this morning, and we're heading off the mountain with a giant ram in the back, and boy, do we feel relieved. And we woke up to a bunch of smoke, too. It's been, you know, smoke kind of blew in last night. And we're hoping the best for the guys that are still up there. Hopefully the smoke blows out, and they'll be able to find that big ram that they're after. There's more rams up there. I think we all thought that with this ram being 180, I think that the other two rams that were with him that everybody thought weren't shooters were probably mid-160s. So still two really good rams there. And there's that other group of five with a mid-160s, maybe even closer to 170, judging off of the size of this one. There's still a lot of good rams there. They're hardcore. They're going to come off a sheep.
Yeah, those guys will do it. They got a lot of people to help. I was kind of envious thinking, man.
They got a lot of friends. Like
seven people.
We don't have that many friends.
Yeah, like, and that takes, like, kudos to those guys. It takes a lot to get a buddy that says, yeah, I'm just going to take a week off work, leave my wife, leave my kids, and literally just come glass for you just to help you fill a tag. Like, they had some really good friends and stuff, so I'm very certain they'll be successful and stuff. It's just, yeah. In this one, the best man won.
I don't even know about the best man, but the man won.
Yeah. I'm just really, I'm really happy. I told Trav, I said, man, I don't know how it works. I said, I try to be really selfless and help friends, help family, help my kids. And I said, I pray a lot hunting and I just go as hard as I can. And usually if I do that, God usually meets me halfway. And on this one, he met me more than halfway because we needed a couple miracles. And just where that ram stopped and the openings and different things like that, it all worked out looking back on it and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and Adam, I say that just as in a joking manner, but in my mind, he deserves that ram. He worked hard. He had a super rough he just had a lot going on this year, building that house, being married. He's got 5 foster kids. Their youngest foster kid that they had for 3 years that they called their son got taken back to his biological mom, which is kind of how the system works. But obviously super emotional and hard on the family, on everybody, when you get attached to this kid that you call your son and you raise him for 3 years. And so that happened literally just a couple weeks ago. So his mind and Tana's mind has not necessarily been in the hunting mode. So this was, I feel like Adam was blessed in this scenario, and a little bit of a wave of happiness, a wave of joy that was well deserved for what they've had to go through this year.
Yep, it worked out. So we got a big season ahead. I'm going to go back to Idaho. Trav's got a deer tag. Tom's got an elk tag. And I fly back to Alaska in a few days. And I'm assuming my wife is very happy, because when I drew this tag, she's like, so what are my moose and caribou plans looking like this year? And I almost just kind of laughed, because I don't think she understood the magnitude of a bighorn tag. I said, this is not a tag of a lifetime. This is a tag of 5 lifetimes to draw a non-resident bighorn tag. There's a lot of people that just have to buy one for 50 or 60 grand, I've heard, in Canada. It's tough. And she didn't like that. When I mean, it wasn't the nicest about it. I said, there's no moose and caribou this year. That stuff doesn't matter. We can do that literally every year over the counter, and they'll be there next year, but I won't be sheep hunting next year. I have this tag this year, and I told her to make plans anyways, and if it works out, I'll be there, but don't count on me. And yeah, she's happy because she's going to caribou hunt. She's got a friend coming up to moose hunt. We're going to kill moose, and then I have to come back down and elk hunt with Tom and Trav. So we have a lot to do.
Great, great way to start off the 2022 season with Big Ram in the back, August 30th,
yes.
Opening day, first day of any fall season that we had, and we're heading out to try and get some more tags filled, put some more meat in the freezer. We all got tons of kids now, and try and produce some more footage and just have a good year. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I just want to close by saying, like, you know, all the friends you want in the world and stuff like that, but, you know, having family that's so selfless like Tom and Trav, that was really vital on this one. And everyone always asked, what's your favorite hunt? What's your favorite experience? And I used to always think it was the 2 brown bears Trav and I got 2018. We shot 2 massive buck bears. Didn't have any brown bear hunting experience in Alaska. I had to sleep under the hide of one of them, and it was just a grind. But this one might be tied or might take the cake, because Tom was here, got to experience it, more people, and there was a lot of pressure and stress, not just on me. Tom's like, man, my stomach's been hurting the last couple days. I think it's because I was so stressed, and, you know, we were all stressed, and they didn't even have the tag. So that shows just how passionate they want me to kill something just as bad as if they had the tag. And, yeah, it could be my favorite hunt of all time. So it's really special. It's going to be an awesome video, and I hope you guys like the podcast. Thank you for listening. Please leave me a cool review.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for joining us. If you like the podcast, please leave us a review, and also reach out to us with any questions. Until next time.